scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot saved. Made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Oof, it's already Friday. Look
at
that.
Today?
Yeah, today's
Friday. Today?
Yeah, we got it ready to rock.
Hot damn!
Welcome to Flames Talk. It's Friday, January 24th, with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. This hour of Flames Talk is underway. We're available wherever you get your podcast, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And hello, Jacob Pelche. That was a real nice game from Calgary's 2019 first-round pick on Thursday night. One of the few players that felt like he was going all night long. Got the bump up to the first line, Wes, and I thought right from the get-go, Pelche had some jump, had some energy, was looking good on the penalty kill, blocked a few shots, getting in shot lanes, was finishing checks, and the next thing you know, sometime in the second period, he's up playing with Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri. I turned to Logan Gordon upstairs, and he actually turned to me and said, have they switched up the lines, or is this just a long shift? Like, did Pelche stay out long? And then so both he and I are watching to see what comes out next, and then all of a sudden you see that this is not a long shift for Jacob Pelche. They had switched up the lines and elevated him. So happy Friday, Wes.
Happy Friday to you too.
And I thought that was a really good game for Pelche on Thursday night. Good on, and the guy who names the three stars in the building may have given him the old first star nod.
I think he was pretty excited about that bonus shift as the first star of the evening, and it was well deserved. You know, as I wrote last night for Post Media, it might have been Huberdeau and Kadri with 3 points apiece that sort of stuck out on the score sheet, but Jacob Pelche was the guy who provided the spark last night for the Calgary Flames, and they needed one. That was a sluggish, lackluster, not a whole lot to like start. Didn't love the first period besides the shorthanded breakaway. And so Jacob Pelche, as Ryan Huska told us post game, as you just outlined, he was one of the exceptions early on. He was one of those guys that had some energy, had some jump, and I think kind of continues to make me wonder, and I say this in a very positive way, what his ceiling as an NHLer might be. And by ceiling, I think I'm just trying to say, you know, is this a guy who, because he is a responsible checker and plays with some energy and brings some speed, but hasn't had a ton of finish, you know, is this a guy who's a bottom six player in the NHL? That's sort of what I've wondered at, you know, as he passed through waivers. Is this guy who, you know, is sort of destined to be a bottom six staple in the NHL? And there's nothing wrong with that if you can play several hundred games in that role. But, you know, you see him get an opportunity to play with two really good players and you see what he can bring to that line. And yeah, I get it. It's just 35 minutes or whatever it was of game action last night, but makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yep.
It makes you wonder where he could fit permanently in a lineup.
I'm really, really happy to see that that this is turned into somewhat of a positive story, or maybe more than somewhat of a positive story. It's turned into a positive story. This was head coach Ryan Huska on Thursday following a 5-2 win over the Buffalo Sabres, goal and an assist, game winner for Jacob Pelche in the win. And this was head coach Ryan Huska post game.
He was skating. I mean, he was harder on the puck tonight. Finished some checks, which we don't ask him to do like he did in front of our bench, but we want him to be a guy that's competitive on the puck and at the puck, and then use his speed to his advantage. And I thought he did that for his line mates. I thought he did it for himself. So that's the best game I've seen him play in the NHL. And hopefully it's a sign of some great things to come for him.
Best game in the NHL for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that. And I think he's had a bunch that you've really liked of late.
Yep.
You know, obviously
Monday in Chicago.
Yeah, the game in Chicago, albeit maybe not against an NHL team, certainly stood out for all the right reasons. But just the sort of totality of it last night, you know, beyond the individual stuff, whether it was Pelche or another opening goal for Huberto or just another really strong performance for Dustin Wolf, beyond the individual stuff, one of the biggest storylines for me last night was the penalty kill. He was a big part of that. He was probably more, excuse me, more physically engaged than we normally see Jacob Pelche.
Yep.
Or maybe not even more physically engaged, but more physically impactful. He's always a guy who's willing to try to throw his weight around, but I think he made more of an impact in that regard. Like, I just thought the overall body of work last night, there was so much to like there.
Yeah. Yeah. I just really like the way that he's come up and been the same guy that interview that you and I had with him Tuesday at the poker tournament, that was quintessential Jacob Pelche,
yeah,
the guy that we've all gotten to know. You see him kissing Ryan Leslie's head post game on Thursday after the win, and you know, just the way that he goes about his business is really, really fun, and that hasn't changed since he's come back up. But he's come back up kind of with a, as much as Jacob Pelche can, kind of with that FU attitude, right? Like, hey, I'm going to prove that I belong here. And he said as much when he sat down with us at the poker tournament on Tuesday.
The mindset was try to prove them wrong, you know, try to prove them that, like, they made a mistake at the start of the year. And not just the Flames, you know, to everybody else in the league that passed on me. You know, it kind of fueled me, to be honest. I think Maybe it was the slap in the face that he needed to come back as the same player that I was. And I think it's been a fuel since the start of the year, to be honest. Since I played my first game, sorry, with the Wranglers, it's been the type of fuel that I had. And I kind of played not with anger, but, you know, just like a small bit.
So he kind of admitted that, hey, when he came back up, he knew that it could be last chance, and he knew that he had to be in a situation like, you know, like he knew that he had to come up and prove himself. And that was a really interesting comment, and I thought that was it gives you a little bit more insight in terms of what we're seeing with Jacob Pelche right now.
Yeah, I've had a few conversations with Jacob Pelche about the not exclusively about the waiver situation, but you know, we've gone down that road a few times, and I always get the sense that, yeah, getting put on waivers by the team that drafted you and the organization you've come up in, that can have that slap in the face quality, no question, and it did for Jacob. But I think it came more from everyone else passing on him. I think that is the hardest thing for a player who believes they should be in the NHL, is when every other team, you know, when you can go to bed the night you're put on waivers thinking to yourself, man, the Flames are making a huge mistake. And then the next morning or the next day at noon, you find out every other team said, no, thanks. We're okay. We'll take a pass on Jacob Pelche. I think that really ignited something burning inside him that he's used in the right way. And I think, you know, Jacob Pelche's energy probably never wavers, but I think there's been more consistency to the rest of his game on this latest call up. I think he's a guy who's, from my vantage point, he's a guy who's benefiting from the realization that, you know, your spot in this league, let alone in the locker room, but in this league, is not yet solidified. And I just think the way he's talked about it, the way he's walked it when he's been on the ice, all that stuff has been pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, good for him. Okay, here's a big question then. Would you keep him on that line with Huberto and Kadri going into this weekend, or at least into Saturday's game in Minnesota?
I don't think you can change it for tomorrow. I shouldn't say I don't think you can. You know, Ryan Husk is the boss and he can do whatever the heck he wants, but I wouldn't change it. I think the tricky part is that if you take Martin Pospisil off that line and put Jacob Pelche there. And I do expect them to keep it that way against the Wild as they start a tough two-game weekend. But I don't know what you're doing with the bottom six in that scenario. What Ryan Huska sort of settled on for a while was Pospisil, Sharon, Govich, and Kuzmenko. Then he had Lomberg with Bishop and Cairns. And then as we got into the third period last night, Kuzmenko, Cairns, and Bishop just became, you know, fans, essentially, all stapled to it. And then he went with a Lomberg, Sharon, Govich, Pospisil. So I guess what I'm getting at is if you don't keep Pelche in that spot, I actually think it probably has more to do with just not being sure what to do with the other lines, mm-hmm. which I think brings us, and I asked some questions about it last night postgame. I think it brings us to a really interesting spot with Pelche or an interesting question, and that's whether he could become one of those guys. Like, they're NHLers who make a career out of being that Swiss Army knife. They kind of never have line mates. They never spend too long in one spot. You kind of use them as a fixer or a gap filler or whatever you want to say. You know, teams have maybe a guy that he never really has a line that we just kind of need him over here, and then we need him over here, and then, hey, we probably need you over here. And I do wonder if that's where Jacob Pelche is sort of trending.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're talking about a guy who was on the third line for most of the road trip. So let's go back to last Thursday in St. Louis, third line, two nights later, fourth line, four nights after that, next game, first line. Like, Ryan Huska clearly is willing to sort of move him around. That guy can be a very valuable asset, that Swiss Army knife. And I do wonder if that maybe is what the future holds for Pelche.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you. Like, I'd keep him on that line to start the game because it worked so well. In a lot of ways, it helped turn the game around. And in a lot of ways, it really got them from a situation where they were pretty poor in the second period, and a 1-0 lead turned into a 2-1 deficit. Could have been worse. And then I really thought that turned the game around. I've already felt like Pospisil's spot on that line had started to maybe not be as effective. And so just overall, I feel like, hey, there's a ready-made opportunity to try something different for a little bit because mm-hmm. things have gone a little stale. I haven't liked the way Calgary's game has been trending for the last couple of weeks. And so maybe it is time to try something a little different. And you also had a situation where you sat down a couple of other players. And I really, really like the energy and the speed and the forecheck that he brings to those two guys. Is a little bit more offense. I think they're a little bit more offensive upside in Pelche than there is in Pospisil. Obviously less physicality and less of that edge compared to Pospisil. But yeah, I'd go with it to start the next game.
Yeah, because he can bring a lot of the same qualities. You know, as Ryan Huska pointed out, he has a similar pace to his game. He can play with speed. He's been, I think, one of his greatest strengths on this call-up has been that he is disruptive on the forecheck. He doesn't do it in the same way that Pospisil does it. He's not throwing a bunch of hits on the forecheck, but he's become a pretty crafty forechecker in the way that he's winning battles down low. You know, one of the goals he scored in Chicago basically starts with his work down low, or maybe I'm thinking of the goal, I'm sorry, that finally got Yegor Sharangovich off the schneid, but that's another example of good work down low. So he can bring some of those, albeit in a different way, he can bring some of those things that Pospisil does. And, you know, the other thing I'd wonder about, buddy, is, you know, Ryan Huska, and you played the clip already, told us last night that that's the best game I've seen Jacob Pelche play in the NHL. And I just wonder, because we are talking about a young player trying to establish himself, I wonder what message you'd be sending him if you took him off that line right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that.
I mean, the only thing that would change that is the fact that many times this year when Huska's made an adjustment in game, he's kind of reverted back to where it was. Like, it's only like an in-game adjustment, you know.
Sure.
He'll bench a guy, and then the next game he's right back on the second line or whatever the case may be.
But
that would be the only thing that I would say to that.
Yeah, and the only, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but the only thing I'd push back on is I don't know that that'd be the right thing to do in this scenario because...
Which I agree with.
I think it's time to show that confidence in Pelche. And there's been lots that Ryan Huska has done to show confidence in him, but... You know, you could go back to training camp and, you know, Ryan Husk is the coach who didn't have a spot for him in the lineup. That's why he wound up on waivers, right? When Jacob Pelche came back up, played a couple good games, he got healthy scratch, taken out despite the fact he was starting to penalty kill, all that. He comes out. That's not the reason they got blown out by the Tampa Bay Lightning, but that's what got him back in the lineup. Like, there's been even... He has, I thought, a pretty strong run there with Sharon Govich and Cairns, and they're trying to get Kuzmenko going, so he winds up on the fourth line. Part of that is a reality of the versatility he has, but I do think, especially with a player of that age, you want to be careful about the message you're sending, and if Ryan Huska takes him off that top line after what he called himself the best game of his career, I don't know what you're telling Jacob Pelche.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there's times you need to be mindful of that. And this would be, be one of them.
I would agree with that. Like I would have him there to start the next game. I just wonder the way they'll go about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious about that too, because you're right. Ryan Huska's history, I would say more often than not, is that sort of, okay, needed to mix it up last game, now back to what works. And as he sits with his assistant coaches on the plane and talks about the lineup for tomorrow, one of the things they're going to look at is that sort of mess of options for the bottom six, and they're going to say, well, we could probably just go back to what we have and see if it works this time. But specific to Jacob Pelche, I don't think that would be the right call.
Read a few texts, 960-960. This says, I'm concerned they have too many players under 6 feet. Big, fast players are needed to go up against the heavy teams, especially in the playoffs. Yeah, maybe true, but that doesn't take away from how well Pelche's played here over the last little bit. I think he's been trending in the right direction for a few weeks now.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, that's why it hurt to lose Walker Duehr on the waiver wire. That's why it hurt before that Walker Duehr wasn't doing enough to remain in the lineup. Would the Calgary Flames like to be a little bit bigger? Absolutely. But, you know, if you are going to have a bunch of undersized forwards in the lineup, you need them to do the kind of things Jacob Pelche did last night.
Mick says Conroy got really lucky that Pelche wasn't claimed. You know, it goes back to that conversation that, you know, you and I had many times during the preseason and leading up to the start of the regular season. It's like, they were quite confident, and they did do their due diligence before they put Pelche on waivers. So they were quite confident he wasn't going to get claimed. But can you imagine had somebody kind of hoodwinked him a little bit, said, no, we're not really interested, we won't claim him, then decided to claim him? Usually that doesn't happen because there is kind of like a code, and teams like to keep relationships good for future transactions that might need to happen. But yeah, I can you imagine if that doesn't happen? Because all of a sudden, with the injuries that they've sustained, Pelche's been a pretty important player for him here.
Yeah, and I was critical at the time of the decision to put Jacob Pelche on waivers. I didn't think, for the reason of carrying eight defensemen, that it was a risk worth taking for the Flames. But, you know, I will say today that I think the answer that we don't know is, would this be happening if Jacob Pelche hadn't been on waivers? You know, when Jacob Pelche talks about a wake-up call, like I can say everything I wanted back in October about how I didn't think it was worth the risk, but the one thing I agreed with the Calgary Flames management on was that Jacob Pelche didn't have the sort of training camp he needed to have. You know, I was talking about keeping him around just to make sure you didn't lose him, but he didn't earn a spot in the starting lineup with the way he played in camp. And so I suppose that's the, you know, that's the great question. Would Jacob Pelche, if he didn't go through waivers and if he didn't get that message that, hey, your NHL career kind of hangs in the balance here. Mm-hmm. Like 31 other teams said they weren't that interested in bringing you in, weren't interested at all. Are we watching what we're watching now? It's hard to say.
This reads, Pelche is the Derek Ryan of the wing, and somebody else says he's the new little Paul Byron. Both are decent comparisons. I still think there's a little Mangiapane in Pelche as well, if you're looking at comparisons. And Jordan says, it's encouraging to see Pelche have success. He's an easy guy to cheer for. And that goes without question.
Mm-hmm.
And not every guy needs to be over 6 feet. Not every guy needs to be a big physical player. I mean, Pelche can be an effective guy. And let's see how it continues. It's still early. It's still kind of in the infancy of what he's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
But I see all those comparisons, defensive awareness and two-way ability, little energy. I think Mangiapane, I think Ryan, I think Byron are all really good comparisons.
It's certainly more common today for an NHL game to be determined by speed than it is by brawn. There's games, I think, where you could look and say, well, size was the difference. And you have teams that are still trying to, in part, win that way. No one's trying to play slow, but you have teams that are still trying to out-muscle opponents. But if you're not that sort of team, it helps to have speed. And that's the way that Jacob Pelche played last night, really took advantage of his wheels and, quite frankly, made Kadri and Huberdeau look faster in the process.
Yep. Good on him. I'm happy for him. See if it continues.
Yeah.
Flames now have a 3-point lead for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. We had that talk with Derek on the roundtable earlier this week about the Vancouver Canucks, and then Thursday night happens. So the Flames win, but kind of regardless of what Calgary does, it's what happened in Vancouver that you're just like,
what the H?
How did they ever get that thing back on the track,
yeah.
Back on the tracks here? So they have that game against Edmonton on Saturday. The McDavid stuff happens, the cross-check, the statement. Vancouver wins that game 3-2. Then they have that really ugly game against Buffalo in their next game where they cough up the 2-1 lead after 40, lose 3-2 to the Sabres, and then they go into Edmonton for the rematch, and it's 3-0 before you can blink an eye, and they get rolled out of that building. And with all of what's swirling around Vancouver, with the with the Elias Pettersson, JT Miller stuff, with both of their futures seemingly up in the air. Now Pettersson's back on the block is what people are talking about. They can't get out of their own way. Thatcher Demko can't make a stop. Like, how does that team get things back on the rails this season? I don't know if it can happen.
Not to tell Patrick Alvin how to do his job, and maybe this is why I'll never be an NHL general manager, but I think I would have traded JT Miller midway through the second period last night. And I say that as someone who was busy at the Saddle Dome and didn't watch the game, but it's just clear that that has become such a distraction that all the off-ice drama has taken so much away from the Vancouver Canucks that they have to address that. I'm stunned we're not sitting here right now talking about where JT Miller was traded today. That's one of those losses. Yeah, would it be a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction? Maybe you could characterize it that way, although we know that this file's been on Alvin and Rutherford's desk for weeks already. But that loss and the fashion it happened in last night was so jarring that I would have made that trade today.
I would have made two trades today. Now,
you're always trying to one-up me.
I really am. That's yeah. Who I am. Honestly, though, the problem is that they're damned if they do, damned if they don't, because this can't continue.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they're going to lose the trade that they make, because everybody knows, like, they're getting nothing from Miller in terms of offers is what we're hearing. And I don't think you're winning an Elias Pettersson trade.
So what, let me ask you this, buddy. What would have to happen, though? Like, everybody knows the bind you're in with JT Miller. So yeah, you're not winning that trade today, but what could possibly happen that you could win it in the future?
I don't know.
It's a tough one, right? Maybe the Canucks keep, hypothetically, like, keep them, get into the playoffs somehow, and then they're sending the message, oh, well, see, we didn't need to trade them, and maybe you wrestle a little leverage back, but you really run the risk of worrying so much about losing the trade that you lose the season. I don't know the right answer there.
That's why I say.
Yeah.
And that's why I really believe, even more so than when we talked about it earlier in the week, and the Flames are really very much in the driver's seat here to make the playoffs. I mean, mm-hmm. St. Louis does nothing for me. And I'm not trying to suggest that, oh, the Flames are in such a better position than St. Louis. No, no, no. Just look at the standings. Flames have a 3-point edge on St. Louis with fewer games played. They're in the driver's seat based on just that. And then you add onto the fact that St. Louis does nothing for most people. They're just kind of there. They win some games, they lose some games, but at no point do the Blues give you this feel that they're just going to figure it out. And Vancouver can't get it right. And they're a little too far back to really look at them overly legitimately.
Yeah.
And Vancouver's an abject mess right now. So that's why, more than anything else, on top of the fact the Flames have shown us through more than half a season that every time they look like they're going to fall back, or everything they're going to go anytime they're going to go completely off the rails, that they get it back. Well, then also, you've got these other two teams that look like they're just going to continue wandering around and not being able to figure it out themselves either.
You know, I had a really interesting conversation with Ryan Lomberg yesterday morning, and he said something similar to what he's said in post-game scrums, and just sort of talking about how, okay, well, as you continue to sit in a playoff spot, the belief just builds and builds. And what Ryan Lomberg said to me is, why would we be the only team that's in a playoff spot that wouldn't be considered a legit playoff team? Like, his point is, look at the standings and it says we're a playoff team, and that's only bolstering our belief that we are a playoff team. Like, why would we be the only team that you're not taking seriously here? And sounds adversarial. It really wasn't, but that just gives you, I think, a glimpse into how the Flames are feeling about this. Because they look around, you know, you're a smart guy, Pat, but they've probably figured it out too, right? They've probably figured out, hey, it's quite a mess in Vancouver. Hey, Blues are okay. They're fine. Yeah, they beat us two in a row. Tip your cap. But I don't know that they terrify us. I don't know that anyone's looking at Utah as a team that's going to suddenly go on a run. And that makes the driver's seat that you've been talking about all the more important.
Yep. Pat and Wes underway this hour on Flames Talk. And hey, coming up next month is the first ever Four Nations Face-Off, taking place February 12th to 20th in Montreal and Boston. Obviously, the four countries, Canada, Finland, Sweden, and the United States. Best on best. And Sportsnet is a proud partner of the event and giving you the chance to win a VIP trip to watch the game through Rogers Beyond the Seat. Rogers giving away four pairs of tickets plus travel and accommodations to the Four Nations, with a new winner being picked every week until February 7th. So you still have lots of time. You can learn more and enter to win at rogers.com/Four Nations. And of course, if you're living in Canada, you can watch every game of the Four Nations Face-Off exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. And one more time to learn more and to enter to win, go to rogers.com/Four Nations.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's dive in. It's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, the news of the day is this. Tyson Barry is on a conditioning loan. He's been sent to the Calgary Wranglers on a conditioning stint. Here's kind of the CBA explanation of a conditioning loan. So what happens is, any team can do this with any player at any point they want. For whatever reason. Sometimes it's injury rehab. Sometimes it's like this. A guy's not playing at the NHL level. They want to get him some playing time and get him back up to speed. So they go to the player. The player has to consent or be okay with it. And then you can send said player to the American League for 14 days or 2 weeks, and you can do that as long as you can deal with it cap-wise. So Tyson Berry's cap hit remains on Calgary's salary cap, and he continues to count against the roster cap of 23 players, but will have the opportunity to go play with the Wranglers and get some games in because he hasn't played since November 12th. So that's kind of the rundown on Tyson Berry on a conditioning loan, and he's going to spend the next couple of weeks with the Calgary Wranglers. Just our feel, our thought on that, gentlemen. How do we react to that?
I was just going to ask you if you had a chance to look to see when the last time Tyson Berry played in the American Hockey League was, and wondering if I may have called one of the six games he played for the Lake Erie Monsters. They would have been a division rival of the Hamilton Bulldogs, and that was my last season in that league. So, yeah, it's been more than a decade since Tyson Berry played in the AHL, but I'm not going to lie, not surprised to see this happen. I mean, he's been a healthy scratch in 29 straight games and in 37 of the first 46 games this season. Last time he played was more than 2 months ago on November 12th. And for me, this is almost less about Tyson Berry, the way this season has gone, and more about Braden Pahal, because we weren't sure who the right side guy on the third pairing was going to be this season. And Braden Pahal, with the way he performed during training camp, the preseason, earned that job, and he's never let it go and might not for quite some time to come after signing that contract extension. So it didn't work out for Tyson Berry on the right side of the third pairing. They've tried him on the left side, and I think it's safe to say he didn't pop in the games that he was given. And now he's, I think, fallen to number 8 on the depth chart for a Flames team that is really focused on being strong defensively and a team that wants to create offense from defense. So this might be less about Tyson Berry's future with the Calgary Flames than it is about his future one of the other 31 NHL teams, is my read in the situation. If someone's going to pick him up, whether it be on waivers or through a trade, he's got to start playing again. So I'm not sure that he'll play another game for the Flames. I mean, Joel Hanley's been really good when called upon, and Dinero Miromanov's back in the lineup and playing pretty well. And, you know, Jake Bean has established himself as the left side guy in that third pairing. So I just don't see a spot for Tyson Berry with this team as things stand. Hey, an injury or two could certainly change that, but it's been so long since he's played. I think it'd be good for him. It'll be weird for him to play in the AHL again, but it'll be good for him to get some games in and maybe show off what he's got. He's a guy who I think could potentially help a team's power play. And maybe that's another factor, fellas. If Flames' power play was still struggling the way it was at the start of the season, maybe they would have given him a longer look or another look. But you know, the power play's been better, so there hasn't been an opportunity on one of the two power play units. Long-winded answer, but I think this will be a good thing for Tyson Berry, whether that impacts his future with the Flames or maybe another team.
I like what this tells you about Tyson Berry, and none of this will come as a surprise. You know, part of the appeal when he turned that PTO with the Flames into a one-year contract is that he has a reputation as one of the best teammates in the NHL. He's beloved by the guys he's played with, but I like what this tells you in terms of, I'm not just here to go through the practice motions and collect a paycheck. I want to show the Flames, I want to show Ryan Huska and his staff that if you need me, you can trust that you can put me in. And I think after, as you pointed out, Wilsey, I think after 29 straight scratches, you'd be hesitant to put a guy in just because you know that's not that far off an off season. That's not that far off, you know, asking a guy to go the 2.5 months without playing a game. I'm as a coach probably not putting that guy in the lineup. And so for a 33-year-old Tyson Berry, a guy with 500 and some NHL points, to be willing to take that conditioning stint to go down and make that statement to his coaching staff, hey, I think I can show you guys that you can trust me when there's an opportunity. I like that part. I don't know, Wilsey, to your point, whether Tyson Barrie plays again for the Flames period, whether he plays in February, whether he plays in March, whatever it is. I don't think that another team's banging down the door if he can't get into the Flames lineup because they haven't had a look at him. But I don't see anything but positives really on either side of the ledger about him heading to the Wranglers for a stint. And I'll just add one thing, and I talk about the reputation as a terrific teammate. You know, I talk about the 800 and some NHL games and the 500 and some points. Hey, if you can have Tyson Barrie around Hunter Brustevich and Jeremy Poirier and Artem Grushnikov for a week or two, I think that's a good thing as well. I think those kids can learn a lot from him.
So I'm just going to take a look here. So 2 weeks takes us to February 7th. And so between now and February 7th, the Wranglers will play, just to quickly pull up the schedule. So they'll play one, two, three, four, five games between now and then. So, you know, that's an opportunity for Barrie to jump back in and play high leverage, high intensity, full pace, regular season games in the second best league in the world. And I think that that is of crucial importance because here's the thing that is most important to me when talking about this is that, and I think we kind of already discussed this, but for me, Wilsey, like if the Flames, knock on wood, sustain a significant injury to one of their regular defensemen, I don't want to even name names, but if, you know, one of their regular guys or a couple of their regular guys go down between now and the start of the playoffs or at some point in the playoffs, and now all of a sudden you've got to get creative, well, you signed Barrie for depth, and they brought Barrie in because they felt they could use a little bit more in terms of bodies on the blue line and a little bit more, you know, depth with significant NHL experience. And if that situation comes to pass, you don't want a guy that had been not playing games for, like, say it happens in March and he hasn't played since November. Well, at least here he had gotten four games of important action in so that you can at the very least have that in the not so distant future. So you can practice all you want and you can be on the ice and bag skated all you want, but until you're playing games, it's not the same. So I think that is the biggest thing for me is that if they needed to end up using Barrie and had to get more creative when it comes to their blue line looks, this is a situation you wanted to avoid having Barrie out for that long.
Yeah. And listen, there's not a lot of teams in the league carrying eight defensemen, as the Flames have since day one of their season. And there are plenty of teams out there looking to add depth on defense heading towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. And yeah, I remember Brad Treleving saying that you want to have 10 NHL defensemen in your roster if you're a playoff team. And the Flames have eight and have had eight all season. And I think they would probably feel pretty comfortable calling up two or three guys from the Calgary Wranglers as well. So the Flames are in a good spot as far as depth on defense goes. And I'm looking for a piece of wood to knock on in my hotel room here. But they've also been unbelievably healthy on the back end this season. So let's hope that continues through the end of the season, whether that be the regular season or the postseason. But I suspect that there'll be teams looking for veteran defensemen between now and the deadline. And I'm not saying the Flames are going to get a haul for Tyson Barrie. It might be a waiver claim. It might be a conditional pick or a late round pick. But who knows? If he goes down and plays well at the AHL level, which I certainly expect him to, maybe there'll be some sort of market for Barrie. And Flames decide they've got enough on the back end at both the NHL and AHL levels. Maybe they give their veteran defenseman opportunity somewhere else.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. Okay, Dustin Wolf is on a roll. He started 7 of the last 8 for the Flames. I think it's 12 of the last 16 now. He started going back to December 14th. This has been a role that we've never seen before from Wolf, and he's handled it very, very well as teams winning games more often than not when he's in there. Now they've got a back-to-back this weekend. They're in Minnesota and Winnipeg Saturday, Sunday. Not a ton of travel between the two spots, but still, three games and four nights is what the Flames are on once again. So he started on Thursday, another great performance against the Sabres. Friends, how would you split the two goalies or use the two goalies? Maybe you don't split them. How would you go about using the goaltenders this weekend in Minnesota and then Winnipeg?
Pat, this is obviously a trick question. There's only one correct answer.
There's no right answer.
No, there's only one correct answer. Dustin Wolf plays both games and plays every game from now until the end of time.
Depends who you're talking to on social media, for sure.
And that still won't be enough. Could play one more game than that. But I've been kind of going back and forth on this, and Nick and I were talking about it on the elevator right down from the press box last night. I think I would probably stick with what they've done in the first five back-to-backs this season. So did you know that the Flames have played five back-to-backs? They are 4-1 in the first half and 1-4 in the second half. And that Dustin Wolf has started every single one of the first halves, and Dan Vladar has started every single one of the second halves. So I'm not even sure that's proper English, but I think you know where I'm going with this. So I would probably go with Dustin Wolf against the Wild and St. Paul, Minnesota tomorrow night. And then, unfortunately for Dan Vladar, you give him the tough game again. You go to him for the second half of the back-to-back against the Jets in Winnipeg, Manitoba on Sunday. That's probably how I'd go about my business. But what had me kind of flip-flopping was how good Wolf was against the Jets last Saturday. I mean, truth be told, and anybody that watched that game or listened to that game probably knows, if not for Dustin Wolf, the Flames don't win that game. He was so good. He was the best player on the ice at Canada Life Center last Saturday night. So that tempts me to go back to him against one of the best teams in the league. But I also feel like you need the 2 points against the Wild tomorrow night, and he gives you the best chance to get him.
Yeah, I pondered this one sort of through that same lens, that Dustin Wolf was so good in friendly Manitoba a week ago, and would you sort of run it back against the Jets? And then with that in mind, would you go Vladar in Minnesota? And then I think, guys, I probably caught myself overthinking it. I just think you stick with what you've been doing. Dustin Wolf has become your starting goalie. That's just a factual statement based on the number of starts he's had of late and the amount of watching that Dan Vladar has done. And the way it works as a backup goalie, sorry about your luck, Dan Vladar, is that you play the second half of a back-to-back. Yeah. And if I'm the Flames needing to try to take advantage of a Wild team that's been struggling on home ice, hoping that Kirill Kaprizov is maybe still a little rusty in his second game back from an extended injury absence, for all those reasons, I'm just not going to mess with it. I'd go with Wolf tomorrow and Dan Vladar in Winnipeg.
First of all, Wilsey, I did knock on wood when I was talking about injuries, so I had us covered in that respect.
Oh, thank you.
Second,
good teammate right there.
Exactly. And then I knocked again when you said it. Few reasons why I would... So here's what I would do. I would go Wolf Saturday and then Vladar Sunday. There were a few people who were like, well, you got to go Wolf both games. Nope, we don't need to be forcing Dustin Wolf in January into situations where he's playing three games in four nights. You still have Dan Vladar, who you still trust, and he can play games when you need him to play games. Okay, so I do not think going Wolf both games is the way to go. Hell, even if Wolf doesn't allow a goal on Saturday, I won't use the word, but doesn't allow a goal on Saturday, I still don't think I'm going back to him. Honestly, I think you still need to be wary of how much you're playing this guy. So that's number one. Number two, I'm with Wes in that the formula's worked. Wolf on the first half of back-to-backs and Vladar on the second half. That's worked. And here's the last one. And this one is quite relevant to me. Because earlier this hour, before you came on, Wilsey, Wes and I were talking about the situation the Flames are in and how they're in the driver's seat right now for a playoff spot. They kind of, well, not kind of, they very much do control their own destiny to be a playoff spot and to be a playoff team when it's all said and done. I don't want Winnipeg getting another look at Wolf, because right now, if the playoffs were to start today, The Flames would be playing the Winnipeg Jets in round one of the playoffs. And I don't want them to get another look or another book or more, get their shooters more active time against Dustin Wolf. If there's a chance, I'm going to be meeting them in the playoffs. First of all, I think Winnipeg, if they saw Wolf again, would be very, very motivated to get more than one by him because they felt like they had one stolen from them last Saturday. So second of all, that's just more game tape the Jets have and more like physical, tangible opportunity to play them again, to play them again for the Jets, which is very valuable to them. I'm not giving them that opportunity. So for many different reasons, I'm going Wolf against Minnesota and then sticking with the formula and going Vladar against the Jets on the second half of the back-to-back.
Yeah, and I said last weekend that because it was, 3-4 or 6-8 with lots of travel in there, that game against the Jets on Hockey Day in Canada looked like a scheduled loss for the Flames. And thanks in large part to Dustin Wolf, it wasn't. They found a way to win that hockey game by a final score of 3-1. And I would say the same about this Sunday's game against the Jets. That, again, looks like a scheduled loss for me. Second half of a back-to-back. Three games in four nights in three different cities and, you know, one province or two provinces in one state and two countries. I mean, it's been a lot of travel for the Flames in the month of January. But, you know, maybe if they do stick with Dustin Wolf, who, as mentioned, is 4-1 in the first half of back-to-backs, and then do turn to Dan Vladar, who's 1-4 in the second half of back-to-backs, he can do what he did in the Flames' first back-to-back of the season, and that was go to Edmonton and upset the Oilers. So it feels like Dan Vladar is due for a win. Feels like he's due to get some more goal support. So let's see what the Flames decide to do. I'm not sure there's a right answer or a wrong answer here, but what they've done to this point in the season has worked pretty well. And I think they've done a really good job protecting their young goaltender in Dustin Wolf and continuing to build him up. So I suspect he'll start against the Wild on Saturday night, but we'll see.
Yeah. Until the next time we speak, which will be some point on Saturday, Willsey. You have yourself a great Friday night. Appreciate it, pal.
You too, guys. Have a good night. Have a good weekend, everybody.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes and thanks to Shan Virgie for being our outstanding producers this hour. And that'll wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.